I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, well, back to Fremantle Shipping News, Brendan Hutchins. Welcome back, Brendan.
It's a pleasure, yeah. Thanks so much for inviting me to come have a chat.
Well, I had to have a chat. I was kindly invited to the big launch of Shipwreck Hunter Series 2 in the Maritime Museum recently. Lots of lovely bubbles to drink, people to catch up with, great music with our friend Lucky Oceans playing in the background, a preview of episode 1 of Series 1. And of course, you at the front of it all, so I thought I have to talk to Brendan more about Series 2. You must be very excited.
Yeah, beyond excited. It's just been, I think those launches are just such a, you know, they're the coming together of everything that you've been working on for a couple of years with a project of this size. So it was a celebration, wasn't it? There's a real buzz in the room, and I was really happy about that.
Well, I'm not sure if it's Hollywood. It was certainly Disney Plus comes to Frio.
Yeah,
again.
It was
really, really something.
Yeah.
And it must have been, with all the things you've done, and I'd encourage our listeners to go back and listen to your story in the earlier podcast that we did a couple of years ago. But to have a company like that involved in getting a series like this out must be sort of exciting at another level.
It is. Feels pretty privileged. Disney is doing only a handful of projects in Australia with Australian producers, so we're lucky to be one of them. And I think, you know, the success of season one, the proof of the success of season one is the fact that we've got a season two as well. So that the fact that they backed that, when I'm sure they're getting pitched lots of different ideas, is really, I mean, it's almost pinch yourself kind of moment, but it also sets the bar very high for us. And so I really love that we're working with a bunch of incredibly passionate professional people and aiming really, really high in terms of what we want to deliver. And we wanted to do that for season two. We wanted it to go to another level.
Well, I don't fit into the category of being a critic. I get in the category of just loving watching stuff and watching your stuff. It fits that bill. It's of a really high quality, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's so visually brilliant on the screen, and the talent that you've got. We'll talk about them too, and how you discover people who know stuff and also can go under the water and do things. Mm. But coming back just to the production, every time I go to the movies, and you do docos as well, and there's all of these names at the end of it, and it goes on and on endlessly, and you think, how many people does it take to make? It takes a lot of people.
It does. I mean, especially a feature production, you know, something else that, you know, Disney might do, a Marvel movie, you sit there for, you know, 5 or 6 minutes at the end and look at all the credits. Documentary's a little bit different. It's a pretty tight team, although I was looking at the numbers the other day because I was interested to sort of work it out. It was 60-plus people that worked across the series, to, you know, in various roles, probably a core team in the office of, you know, 13, 14 people, and we have about 15 or 16 in the field filming, so 30, 40 people. And then there's a number of companies that we work with on the, you know, the color grade, the audio mix, all the graphics that we build, which I think were a real step up this year as well with a company called Last Pixel. I think the documentary production is a lot tighter, but there's still a long list of people that you work with. Our team on the boat is, you know, the five guys that are on camera, plus we'll have an expert for the episode. And then it's just myself directing, one sound operator, and then two camera operators, a lead director of photography and a B-cam. We have to keep it pretty tight because boats aren't big spaces and they're also really expensive. So we need to be pretty nimble and really efficient.
Now, let me properly introduce you. Those who have started to listen to this and have read the words that precede listening to the podcast will be aware that you are Brendan Hutchins. You're the director and producer. You're from VAM Media, which you set up some years ago. If you go onto your website, which I really love, you discover that you work in art and music, comms and promo, short stuff, and then the docos and series. And that's what we're really talking about today, the Shipwreck Hunter Series 2. But remind some of our listeners who mightn't be as familiar, what happened in, or how it came to be Shipwreck Hunter Series 1 and the sort of people who were engaged in that and then flowing into series two.
Yeah, it's a bit of a long story, but an interesting one. I was asked to come and direct a documentary for Shark Week on Discovery Channel with a bunch of guys, divers, who had this crazy idea of going to the Abrolhos Islands and diving with sharks and testing if they'd react to a heightened heartbeat. So it was called Mission Impossible. It was a short documentary. So I had never met these guys. It was Ryan, Andre, Johnny, and Ash, who are all the Shipwreck Hunters team now. And of course, Noosh as well is part of that team. And we had this incredible time, 8 days on the Abrolhos Island, filming, diving with sharks. And at that time, they told me about this idea they had to make a documentary about shipwrecks. And so it took years later that sort of it came up again, and they came to me and said, you know, we've actually discovered a shipwreck with a bunch of friends up in Dampier. And that formed the basis of then creating a series. Cut a long story short, we managed to get that series in front of Disney, who hadn't done any commissioning in Australia before. That was thanks to Steve Bibb, who's the executive producer of the series. He's based in Sydney. Steve was the former head of ABC Factual. So, you know, very, very respected in the industry, had, you know, a lot of success and loved the project. So he sort of took it to another level. And it was just great timing, you know. We'd got the right project in front of the right people at the right time. And before you knew it, we were contracting season one. And we developed, you know, six ideas, six missions, as we call them, with the help of the WA Museum as well, the maritime archaeologists there, which is, we're very lucky here to have such an incredible maritime archaeology department, which is very fitting to have that in Fremantle. If anyone hasn't been to the Shipwrecks Museum before, I really, really suggest that you go there, because it's a great gallery, and there's a Shipwreck Hunters display there as well. So yeah, I mean, season one, back in 2021, we filmed that, and it was released in 2022, and then it took us a couple of years to get the next series happening.
Brendan, it's more than, it seems to me, Shipwreck Hunters than just your average doco. Mm. You can go out and you can do a doco about, you know, X, Y, Z and somebody and things they've done and tell a life story, or even The Walking Man. But but here, it seems to me you tell a much bigger story. It intrigues people. You feel as if you're really in the middle of something, of an adventure.
Mm.
I mean, is that's your job, isn't it, to tell that story?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real teamwork on that one. It's great that you feel that way about it too, because it is deliberate. We really wanted to create an adventure series. The shipwreck is just a way into that adventure. So we spend a lot of time in pre-production, developing the story, lots of research, great research team. You kind of plot out the story itself before you go and film, so we know exactly where the various beats might be in terms of telling the historical story. And then the mission itself, the search for whatever it is that might be being searched for. And then the experience of the team, the underwater experience, wildlife. So it's almost like there's three stories happening, and the main thread is the mission itself. Will they find it? Will they find it? Will they find it? But there's lots of dog legs on the way, because you're telling this historical story, but then there's the contemporary story, the experience of being out there as well. And I think that's what's really appealed to a family audience. That's why Disney's such a great home for it.
It is, isn't it? It's that family audience thing. That's the Disney Plus motto, really, isn't it? And but what about just the quality of it, the colour in it, the scenes? I guess the scenes, in a sense, God given. It's there. You don't have to create that. Although that's a bit unfair. You've had to create it as a visual.
Yeah, we talk a lot about how we're going to film it, you know, what various roles there are that we need to divide and conquer. It just comes down to our director of photography, Darren McKay, and Reese Jones, our B-cam operator, Jason North doing an incredible job on sound, and then the team beneath the water, Andre Rarakura, the lead underwater director of photography. These are like world class. operators that are incredibly passionate about what they do, and try and get them to stop filming is probably the biggest thing. You know, long days, never stop giving their best. And when we get to edit, there's you're just spoilt for choice. So I think if my job is to bring together the team in a way that we're focused on the same thing, and that, you know, a lot of productions do this. We talk about it being a big family, but we really try and encourage that, and we trust people to do what they're good at as well. So it's actually not really controlling it. It's just guiding it, making sure we're hitting the right story points, and then that trusting that everyone that works on the show is so good at what they do, it's going to turn out incredible.
Well, on the family side of things, at the launch, it felt like a very large family get together, small children and family members, and a lot of love in the air.
Mm.
As to the role you play, I imagine in that early planning period, you've had to visualise what this thing's going to look like when it is taken out of the can and put up and the launch happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think if you've already done one series, then you're just looking at ways that you can improve it. You're looking at ways that you can do it maybe more efficiently to give you a bit more room to execute things in a more precise way. So I think, yeah, we were more efficient. We did a few things, like we wanted to be a little more cinematic, so maybe shooting a little wider here and there so that you let action happen. You're not over-cutting things. Really holding drone shots for a long period of time so that they sort of creep in. And it just sets a sort of mood. Every episode starts with like an incredible drone shot of the location we're in, and it sort of holds for 5 or 6 seconds. And so I reckon you just sort of sit back and go, right, okay, you settle in a way. And that's a filmic way of doing things.
That's what strikes me. And let's hope there's a third series. I mean, there's plenty of wrecks out there, Brendan, I believe.
There is. I mean, they say that there's some 1,600 along the WA coastline, the massive 20,000 kilometre WA coastline, including all the islands. Some 1,600, and only, you know, not even a third of those have been found, 300 and something. We're lucky enough now to have found a couple ourselves, or the team is. I should give credit to, you know, the core Shipwreck Hunters team, Ryan, Andre, Johnny, Noosh and Ash. They really are the heart of everything, and they work harder than anyone on the series as well. And they're filmmakers, but they're driven to find these shipwrecks and bring the stories to life. So
really
there's more to be found, for sure.
It really is a great collection of talent, isn't it? It's people who, in a sense, are in academe as well as with the skills underwater photography, the passion for the subject matter, and then you get drawn into it with a background that wasn't necessarily in underwater photography initially.
No, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
And then you all get to work together. I imagine there are some challenges in getting that right and making it work, but you seem to have got there.
Yeah, we're really lucky that. I feel the biggest win is that there's no alpha kind of personalities within the group. Everyone's very, very kind, generous people that like to spend time together, that have got each other's back, that care about each other outside of the work that you're doing as well. We've become really, really close friends, and we know each other's families and we spend time together and those sorts of things. So that goes a long way. Honestly, we have not had, across two series, we have not had any big blues. There's not been anyone who's just cracked it when we're out filming. And there's big challenges and there's a lot of stress. But we've just got it right in terms of the balance of what people are out there to do and just the feeling amongst the group of people, yeah.
Talking about the challenges, how would you sum them up?
I think just the challenge of being at sea is the biggest thing. And like you said before, my background wasn't in the ocean at all, other than being, you know, a Fremantle person and loving the ocean and snorkeling and all of that sort of stuff. Definitely not been out on boats that much in my life. The core team are all commercial divers. They spend their life underwater. So they're very equipped at doing that. The biggest challenge I think is making sure that we don't go over budget. That's one of the biggest things, because if something goes wrong, it's very expensive to fix things up, and that's happened a couple of times. Seasickness is a big thing as well.
Seasickness.
So, yeah, that happened.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it's a big drain, and you know, maybe it could have been more part of the series, but I think if you go too far with that, you detract from the story itself.
Yeah.
But maybe there'll be some behind the scenes videos that come out over the coming weeks, because the team are just machines. They just literally will you know, have their moment to be a bit sick and then come straight back to what they're doing. And it's a tiring scenario.
They're all out of central casting as well, Brendan. How do you manage that?
Yeah, well, looking back, it's just like, how did we do that? How did we get through it? But there's something about the excitement of being out on the water. It is really addictive. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'd found myself out at sea feeling quite unwell. Maybe things aren't quite going to plan. Half thinking, I can't wait till this is over. And then as soon as you get home, you just want to do it again. It's something about the adventure and the shared experience, especially if you find something. It's a very, very addictive, I'm sure people in the fishing game are the same, or there's just something about being out on a remote part of the ocean where you feel incredibly vulnerable and really small, but it's a powerful feeling where you feel like you're right in the middle of nature as well, and the ocean is like nothing
and
else.
And it's all down under where you are sitting up.
Another world. It's like landing on another planet. We were at Salisbury Island, which is 140 kilometres from Esperance. It's pretty much the last stop before you go, all right, we're going to Antarctica. And it's a Jurassic island. It's actually part of a mountain range that connects to the mainland. So there's this huge range that heads out in the ocean and that pops up, in, like many islands, you know, pops up as an archipelago. Ancient place. And there's, you know, rock wallabies out there that exist only on that island that must have been there for so long. There's great white sharks, and there's a seal colony, and you just feel so alive because you're so far away from, you know, your day-to-day life.
And something so special as that.
Mm.
Sharks. I mean, I have to ask about sharks. There'd be people thinking, well, what about the sharks, Michael? Ask them about the sharks. did you see a few? Did they see a few?
Oh, always. Yeah. Yep. This is the thing. There are sharks in the ocean. And the population's got more and more comfortable with that, even though, you know, of course there's always a danger. But the guys are expert at doing dangerous things safely. So in areas where there might be large sharks, there's, you know, we have shark cages, we have other risk mitigation that we put into place, and they observe. They're an amazing creature, sharks, and they are a really important part of the ecosystem and the balance within that ecosystem. And the more that we understand and respect that, I think the more that we also understand that we need to protect these important ocean habitats, and make sure that they are that way into the future as well. It's a big part of what we all believe in conservation in the ocean. Really pleased this week that the Exmouth Gulf has been is going to be a marine park, and we need more of that, that's for sure.
We've sort of touched upon the economics of this. You wouldn't want to lose a very large, expensive underwater camera overboard and not be able to find it, or find it and then find you can't use it again. But in broader terms, the economy, Shipping News ran a story this week about how in the end of 2027 into 28, Princess Cruises are going to homeport a big cruise boat here. And for a number of months and voyages will be going up the WA coast, they estimate it will contribute one way or the other about $140 million to the state's economy.
Wow.
As a result of which the state has kicked in to encourage them to do this, which I suppose is good governing. But we've got the whole arts film, the industry you're involved in, when you make something like this and people come in and back it, and you get the Screen Wests of the world and the like to come in, there must be quite an economic impact. And I don't know if you measure it, but with all of the people we've talked about who are employed, the places you go, the people you need to make the movie, pre-production, production, post-production, all those things, it must be one hell of a thing to make a docu-series like this.
It is, and it's. I feel really good about that too, that it's 100% WA production, 100% WA employees, other than our executive producer is based in Sydney. Everything else is WA based. The funding that we pulled together, yeah, we're really lucky to have Screen West, Lottery West here in WA. It's very, very generous support, and especially through the WA Regional Screen Fund. So that has really helped bring this series to life. Without it, it might not have happened. So there's spending ratios as well in terms of getting the funding. There's certain ratios that you need to then ensure that you spend within that jurisdiction as well. So that makes sense. And we over deliver on that, which is really good. And hopefully that means that we'll see more and more of it. Screen Australia also is a big funding component of our project as well. And for the first time, Tourism Western Australia got involved with season two, which I think was just, that's fantastic. And there's so much that I think the series can do to encourage people to come to Western Australia and experience these amazing regional areas and fantastic ocean locations, especially at a time when we know they're really under threat. And the more that we can bring awareness to that, the more tourism dollar maybe that we can draw from it as well, maybe helps to protect it.
I've got no doubt that people in the proverbial overseas countries seeing a Disney Plus show like Shipwreck Hunters 1 or 2, see its coastline, and say, where is that? Discover it's Western Australia. And then you get these little expeditionary cruisers going up and down. They then want to pull into these places or somehow learn more about the coastline near those places. It must be good for tourism.
100%. I mean, I wish we could quantify it, but anecdotally, we get a lot of feedback from direct messages online and through our social media from all over the world. You know, we've had messages just this week from people in Japan, the UK, heaps from the United States, New Zealand, South Africa, Germany. It's just incredible. All of them saying, I want to come to West Australia one day. And then we know people up on the boats in Ningaloo, the tourist boats, who say, we had people on the boat today who said they saw the series and they came here because they wanted to experience it. So that's fantastic.
It's brilliant. It's great for you guys about making it to have that very direct feedback.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, as I said earlier, let's all hope that between you all and Disney, there's a series three. I mean, how long does it actually take? You gave some indications of timelines earlier, but if you with all the experience you've got, if tomorrow were day one, is it something like a 3-year period before you can plan it, write it, get it in, get the crew, get it happening, get it made and have a launch? I mean, how long do these things take?
It is exactly what you explained, but at the same time, we'd go tomorrow if someone said, here's the money. I think we've got a real backlog now of stories that we've developed through research. So, we've definitely got a series three, a series four ready to go almost. We'd love to explore outside of Western Australia too. I think that could be something that maybe we'd consider. I think the series has to always keep growing as well. There's definitely, you could make another series in Western Australia, no doubt, but maybe there'd be an expectation to sort of expand and maybe expand overseas one day as well. So to your question, it does take time. There's certain funding rounds that you've got to apply for. You've got to get, a commitment from Disney Plus. And we'll see if the season two does well. You never know what might happen. And then just pulling together all the various funding, depending on the timeline of when that funding is available. Then you go into a 6 or 7 week pre-production period, and then it's about a 5 or 6 month production cycle. And that's full on because you're doing six expeditions almost back to back. If you were doing that as, you know, the WA Museum, you might do two a year because they're so, such a big thing to organise. And they're such a strain on, you know, people as well. So doing six of those back to back is huge. You know, families have got to, you know, reorganise themselves because there's people away and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot to think about. But yeah, in short, we could start tomorrow. The likelihood, though, is that it would be a little bit longer, and then it's about a 15, 16 month window from start to finish for this series, that is.
Well, were you able to do anything else when you were making it with that six episodes back to back, being fully engaged and planning the next steps?
Yeah.
Anything else that you can do?
Yeah, look, I think I really want our business to be expanding as well, and I think more and more we're getting more interest to be doing other things as well, and we're more confident as you grow as well. So we don't want to go into a big dip now and not have any production on. You've got to have continuity of production, and I think some of the other larger companies in Perth, in Fremantle, like, you know, your Prospero Productions, have done an incredible job of having continuity of production, Electric Pictures and others. So we'd love to have a couple of projects on the go, and we've got a number in development at the moment. We also still do a lot of, you know, promotional work for various organisations. We do all of the video work for the Art Gallery of Western Australia as well, and they've really invested in a higher premium level of production, and that's really paying off for them, I think. If you have a look at some of the content that they're putting out that we produce, I'm really, really proud of that as well. And some of that has gone on to win short film awards and so on too. So definitely always got my finger in the arts sort of area as well, and want to be making arts documentaries because I think there's such a powerful story to tell within the arts. And we've done a couple of those that you've seen as well.
Yes.
Walking
Yes.
Man and Drawn to Water with Roger Swainston,
yes,
another Fremantle-based artist. I want to be doing more of that. So definitely find time to do other things and bring other teams in to be working with us on it as well.
I think you might have mentioned sort of Marvel film franchises and so on. I won't ask you whether you can imagine directing something like that, but what would be the difference between being in that big feature film, Hollywood style — it doesn't have to be in Hollywood these days, of course — and the work you've developed and got into, I mean, professionally?
The difference between making something like
yes.
that? Oh, it's hard to really understand it because it is pretty foreign to me as well. The documentary world is very different, obviously. Hopefully we get more first-hand experience of that with the new studio that is being constructed, which is close now. I think that's going to be really exciting. I think if, you know, Cinefest Oz was last week, and local production of feature films, dramas, has gone through the roof as well. And I think there's more and more going to happen in that world. So it's a much bigger production. So there's a lot more departments doing different things. There's a lot more to manage. And I think there's, you know, a very clear story that's being told as well. We're a bit more open to things changing and happening in the moment. And I think we like to be really well prepared and really well planned so that things can then change. I think if you go into something and just think it's going to change, so we don't need to prepare. That's, when I was younger, I thought that's how you made documentaries. You just sort of, you turn up, you know what you're doing, and then off you go. You actually have to like meticulously plan it out, write the story in its completion, and then you're really prepared for things to change.
That's interesting, because I wanted to ask you, at this point in your career, and you've got plenty of years ahead of you, what are the big things you've learned?
Oh, so much. I mean, that being one of them, that you have to be so, so well prepared. And, you know, we work with a lot of emerging producers and directors as well, where that's sort of my first bit of advice, is you've got to do more than you think that you have to do in order to prepare. I've learned that getting the mix right with people is probably the most important thing. Working with people that you really get along with is just as important as their skill set. Trusting people to do what they do and not micromanaging. I think, you know, that's probably true in any business as well. Employing people that are good at something that you're not good at as well. Employing outside of your skill set to complement what you do. Understanding what you're good at as well. And without being, you're feeling like that's an ego thing or anything, like knowing what you're really good at and maybe making sure that they're the areas that you really lean into. Paying respect also to the places that you're filming in. It's really, our starting point is speaking with First Nations people, making sure that we're talking directly with traditional owners of the areas that we're in, involving them in the episode if we can, if it suits the shipwreck story. That's been a real fantastic experience for all of us as well. So, I mean, yeah, there's so much to learn about yourself and about each other and how to get better and better at what we're doing.
Well, Brendan Hutchins, I can't wait to see the next major production that you're involved in. I look forward to another Shipwreck Hunters series. But before we finish, I mean, you must have to keep fit to keep yourself mentally active. But I guess if you're out there doing these things daily, it's like running a constant Pilates exercise so program. True.
When you're on a boat, you don't realise that you don't stop moving. You're constantly balancing yourself. So it is like you get really, really tired and you get really brain tired. I don't keep as fit as I'd like to. The Shipwreck Hunters team do. You know, they're just incredible. Even on the boat, they'll get up at 5 a.m. and they'll go and do a 30, 40-minute session out on the deck of the boat. They'll be doing a gym session when we're on land, they're extremely fit people. But they're like elite athletes. They eat really well, they exercise a lot, they're mentally really prepared. Johnny especially and the team is really focused on mental health. He builds an ice bath wherever we go as well. He's really big on that and how good that is. Sleep is really, really important to the team. You'd think, I had this dream of, when we first started, it's going to be a rum drinking kind of adventure and we're all going to be, getting tattoos, and just having this rollicking time. But it's actually much more focused than that and much really, really polished professional kind of environment. So I need to get fitter though, I reckon, yeah. I'm 50 next year too, so I want to be fit and 50, yeah.
I have no doubt you'll get there, Brendan. Thanks for joining me today.
Pleasure, thanks.